Welcome to the Court Report. I'm Jerry Price. I am here with Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Banghart. And coach, one more weekend of the regular season.
It happened fast.
I mean, it does not seem that long ago that we were sitting here and we were saying, you know, we were bored in January trying to think of things to talk about. And we were like, well, it's going to come quickly. Like, you're going to come back and it's going to zoom by. And it has. And now you're at the last weekend with the last two games for your team at Brown at Yale. And one, like, how long ago does January seem when you had nothing to do?
Well, especially when you're looking at the film of the first time we played these guys, which was early February, and to where we are now. It feels like a long time ago because of how much better we are. But
it's
also
a blink.
But it also feels like,
remember when we were here, it was Christmas Eve, and it was New Year's, and it was New Year's, and, you know, does that seem that long ago?
I know, now it's March. I'd like the snow to melt then.
That's true. We could use some spring.
Yeah, I'm ready.
It's actually, I think it's supposed to get warmer next week.
Okay, well, come on.
So let's talk about this week first. So your team's in the Ivy tournament. Your team's tied for first with Penn.
Yes.
And I believe that you're going to be either the one or the two seed. And I believe that if you win both, no matter what else happens, you'll be the one seed, which is a pretty good thing to know going into the last weekend of the season.
Yeah, to be able to control your own destiny the last weekend, it's something we're trying to make a habit here. But when you started the league 2-2, I wasn't sure that that's where we were going to end up, and just incredible fortitude and trust by this group has gotten us this opportunity.
So your team has had a week to get ready for these games after 5 games in 8 days.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've been concerned about the 5 games in 8 days. You won all 5 of them.
Yeah.
But none of them were easy.
No.
And you got to the end of the line against Harvard in the last game on Saturday. Were you guys running on fumes a bit or running on emotion? That was a really good game.
That was a good game to watch, I'm sure. You know, we've been obviously riding on Bella's back, and now her back was getting sore. And so she was really fatigued and really tried to grit through it, has shown great toughness and able to do that. But, bodies were sore to the point where we had to go pretty light so far this week. It's just we just need to gather ourselves and get ready here for go again.
Well, let's go back to Friday night when the Dartmouth game. You're down at halftime. What are you thinking?
We got to play better. You know, I felt like we really had to. We made a tactical change. We switched everything because we can against Dartmouth, but it wasn't the right call. You know, so we ended up at the second half. We stayed on our own matchups so that we could be more accountable to positioning and more accountable to our own. Keep better defenders on better players, and that was the key to the game.
And it was a third quarter was just a blowout, and it turned out to be a 17-point win, mm-hmm. but still down at the half. So I would think one thing that you might have hoped to do on Friday night is get a big lead and get some guys out, but you weren't able to do that.
No, yeah, we had to win the game one at a time. And then, of course, with Kalea going down, who had had such a good experience, had been playing really well for us and giving us that kind of momentum and energy that we needed off the bench, going down with a terrible knee injury, you're shallower in terms of your roster. So, yeah, it was good to come out strong in the second half.
And at the same time you were doing that, Harvard and Penn were going to overtime.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Harvard came into the weekend knowing that if it swept Penn and Princeton, it would be in first place.
Yeah.
So Harvard had a lot to play for, and Dartmouth was playing to get in the Ivy tournament and still is playing to get into the Ivy
mm-hmm.
tournament. But when you see Harvard and Penn go to overtime, are you thinking to yourself, that helps us a bit? It's a little tougher for them on Friday night? obviously, Penn came close to losing, which would have been good for you guys.
Yeah.
But, Harvard comes here the next night, and you got to wonder about how much energy they have, both mentally and physically, after coming so close against Penn. And then your team, you have to wonder how much you have mentally and physically because you're playing your fifth game in 8 days. And what was your sense from the start? Can you see that it was going to be tight, that both teams did have a lot, were playing hard?
Yeah, well, I wasn't as worried about Harvard being fatigued because they didn't have 5 games in 8 days.
No,
right?
I mean and more so, mentally in that case.
Yeah, so I thought, obviously.
I guess how big a deal is that? You know, like, again, like a lot of this is I see things from my perspective.
Yeah.
But from your perspective,
yeah.
When you come here, when you're go into a weekend and your Friday game is so tough mm-hmm. mentally, win or lose, you know, mm-hmm. you're playing one of the two of the best teams in the league are playing Harvard and Penn. They go to overtime. Win or lose, it's a tough one. Where's your team the next day? Because you have to dial it right back up.
Absolutely. I think we always say here that every win counts the same and every loss counts the same. And so if you go out and beat a team that traditionally has been really good that year and then you lose to someone who's not, it's a wash, right? So for our particular team, I really think it's we immediately the next day, we hand in the scout that night of the team that we're playing the next day. We shift focus. I'll put film in their app on their phones, et cetera. So
But I also assume you have to do some of that during the week, right? Or do you just focus on
the Friday? Yeah, we focus just one of the days, though, because we're taking some off days now during the week this time of year. But I knew it was going to be a big game because, you know, Harvard's got a lot of seniors on their team, and they've got they have a great pride in their tradition. And after you knew you had a chance to win the Ivy, to be at least a tie in the Ivy title, and you lose in overtime, you really don't want to come down and get swept. And so we recruit against them a lot, et cetera. It's a good rivalry game, and we're thrilled to come out on top.
Well, first it was senior night.
Yeah.
So what's that always like for you when you see the kids that you recruited and you establish relationships with them that go back to, I presume, when they're juniors in high school, and now all of a sudden it's senior night?
I know. You see them. Luckily, I get to watch that they are totally different people in a good way. They're an enhanced version of themselves. But senior night's always a little bit tricky because it's you want to ride their emotion. You don't want to give them yours, right? Because they have the job to do. They have a win, and I know in my heart that what they want to remember is a win on senior night. So I have to keep my own emotions in check and really, you know, meet them where they need to be met. And I felt like Saturday night, I think with the fatigue and with it being senior night emotionally, most of my timeouts were less tactical and more urging. I was just urging them on how much this would mean to you guys.
Like, do you verbalize that?
I would say, I mean, I was usually against Dartmouth, it was very tactical, and I'm a very tactical coach and make adjustments as needed. But this was much more like, you guys, I know you're tired and you look tired, you're not finishing. It doesn't matter. You're going to want this game. You're going to want to go out on senior night. And I sort of likened it to Kalea being a kind of really fast as well as being a great teammate because she had been injured her whole entire career. And then I looked at Sydney and she was so defensively accountable. And then you look at Rush and she's a shot maker, right? And I said, let's channel those three things. Let's play fast. Let's be defensively accountable and let's make shots in their honor this tonight. So I just kept going back to that to try to muster as much energy as I could from them.
Let's talk about Gabrielle Rush for a few minutes. We've talked about Sydney winning the Pine Prize and we've talked about Clay being her. We haven't really talked much about Gabrielle Rush. And she's a player who never started a game her first 3 years. I didn't realize that until I went and I looked at her stats. She's closing in on 800 career points, which is a lot for somebody who never started as a freshman, sophomore, or junior. And she, you know, not to jinx anything, but presumably your team has a minimum of four games left.
Yeah.
The two this weekend, the at least one Ivy tournament game, and presumably at least one postseason game.
Mm-hmm.
She has a very, very good chance of the school single season record for three-pointers.
Mm, good for her. Yeah, you know, she's, if I had one word to describe Rush, it would be competitive. You know, and that, when I'm super competitive. So I told her our senior night after the game, I said, this could have gone either way, right? We could be like oil and water because we're so competitive and we could have jumped right in line with each other. And that's what we did all year is we've just been in line with one another. And I keep urging her along competitively and she keeps being where I need her to be. So she's had a great senior year.
What do you think of somebody like her who whose minutes per game have basically doubled from her first 3 years to this year?
Yeah.
It's putting a lot of, because you can't just come off the bench now and make some threes. You have to do everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's asking a lot of a player that you haven't asked that much of. You've asked stuff of her,
of course,
but not
right.
that much.
Especially
of.
When you take away, you know, Abby Myers from the season, you needed it even more. I think in Rush's case, she's a great example, and she's vocal about this. She's a great example to our current young guys that, like, you guys have already played more minutes than I did in my first 2 years combined. And, like, it's just trust it. Just keep going. Trust what coach says. Trust how hard you work. Trust yourself. She deserves this because she's just stayed the course and got better, a little bit better every year.
And Carly Littlefield's game against Harvard, all weekend, but against Harvard, made a lot of the big plays down the stretch.
Yeah, she was a warrior. You know, she's always been a steady warrior. She's been a little bit beat up this year, so she's kind of been a little bit more inconsistent than she was the previous year. But when you need her, she was there. And I just hugged her and told her how proud I was. I mean, she was a warrior.
And then after all the dust settles, Bella Allery's the Ivy Player of the Week again.
Yeah, you know, that's, you know, she really felt, like I said, beat up and sore. And she felt like she was letting the team down, and I reminded her that she's shooting over 50%. She's done another double-double. You know, you doing you is plenty for us.
So looking ahead to this weekend now, it's Brown Friday night, Yale Saturday night.
You got it.
And obviously Penn is the opposite, Yale Friday night, Brown Saturday night, tied with Penn going into the last weekend. Have played these teams already, lost to Yale the first time, and now you got to go there. Mm-hmm. So where are you?
On their senior night. Well, we gave up, you know, if you look at the weekend that we played them last time at our place, they collectively shot 52% from three. They went to the free throw line 47 times. They scored on average of 85 points. that's just, those are not stats that are where we are right now. So trying to make sure they understand the growth we've made as a team. And I told them if we, you know, they wanted, we do this headphone karaoke on the bus rides home. And after Penn, they were initiating some of the newer guys we had on our bus to do it. And they asked me to do it. I said, you got to win an Ivy title for that first. So I'm starting to get, I got to start picking out a song with how dialed in these guys seem to be already.
So one thing is you have the tiebreakers then for the Ivy tournament after that. I've heard you sing. You and I sang
Santa
Claus is Coming to Town.
That's right. Maybe I should do that song.
So with the Ivy tournament coming up and all these crazy tiebreakers where it goes to head-to-head, but the head-to-head doesn't always break the tie. So then you go to the top of the standings and who lost to who and who beat who. And you know, could the number one seed could come down to Princeton having lost to Yale versus Penn having lost to Harvard, and Harvard not definitely, but with a chance to finish ahead of Yale in the standings, but Harvard could finish behind Yale in the standings, which would then flip Princeton and Penn. Are you paying attention to any of that, especially as it, you know?
Well, I will say, full disclosure, I emailed you the start of the week, and I was like, break it down for me in a way I can understand.
Getting a headache from it. There's so many combinations.
Totally.
On the women's side.
And what you sent me was, I'm sure, thorough and clear, but I was confused. So we're going to
so
work
many
on
things depend on, you know, who you're going to use the first place tie. If there's a first place tie between Penn and Princeton, you're going to use that to break
on
the
who's
ties
the three. Yeah.
For three and four and five and six,
right,
conceivably, and then use that in reverse to break the tie for first and second. So
yeah,
if Princeton and Penn are tied, then you're going to say, all right, so if Harvard and if it comes down to, say, Yale and Cornell for the last spot, you're going to say, okay, Yale has a win over Princeton and Penn, Cornell doesn't. Therefore, Yale beats out Cornell or Dartmouth if they're tied. So now Yale's there. So now you use that to break the tie between first and second, even if Harvard drifts.
Yeah,
it's
so
just bizarre.
It is bizarre. So we're going to focus this weekend on hanging a banner, because that's a legacy you want. In your senior year, when you come back to Jadwin, what was your senior year, and is there a banner determining that you were a champion? And so this weekend, we win two, we hang a banner. And then we will figure out who we're playing quickly after that, and I'll start hammering down on Sunday with the next round.
I mean, there's a lot of possibilities for the Ivy tournament. It'll be held at Yale next weekend, and you know, it's very possible that you and Yale could play back-to-back games on Yale's court,
mm-hmm,
or it's very possible that you have to play Harvard again.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah,
and then lingering out there would be another game against Penn, and all that to get to the NCAA tournament. So, a lot going on here. And before all of that happens, this weekend's trip and then the Ivy tournament, let's just talk a little bit about your win against Harvard, which was your 250th.
Yeah, I had no idea, Jerry. That's the kind of stuff you're supposed to keep me posted on.
I had no idea about it either.
Oh, okay. No idea. And I didn't know that it was going to be Kathy's some number as well if she had won it. I can't remember, but it was a big number. I had no idea.
I actually didn't notice the game where Bill Tierney became the all-time leader in wins in at Princeton.
I don't feel as bad
but
then.
That wasn't like a round number. That was like 170 or something, or 130 something. He ended up with 238. You have more. 250 is a round number, but it's not nothing really much different about 249 or 251.
Right.
But you do have more than twice as many wins as the next two coaches combined at Princeton.
Oh, wow.
And you have 250 wins. You've won 80% of your games. But you,
yeah, that's a good stat.
What people don't realize or forget is you started out 14-39. So to turn it around from there,
yeah,
to get to 80% of your wins or 90% since then in the Ivy League, yeah, it's pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, I had to bring up those first 2 years. Yeah,
no, but I mean, it's one thing if you walk into, you know, it's one thing if you're the person who replaces Gino Auriemma at UConn,
yeah,
with all the mechanisms in place already.
Right.
It's another thing if you're, to use the Bill Tierney thing again, to go to Denver where they don't have a tradition and win a national championship, or to come here where you're inheriting a team that's struggling and you go 7-23 your first year,
yeah,
and then 14-14 and 26-3 and never look back. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
That's much harder to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, I had no idea. I do care about the win. I think the win percentage is cool, because when we recruit, we talk about one of eight teams goes to the NCAA tournament. We only got to be one of eight. But yet you don't come here to play seven teams. You come here to beat compete nationally. So you can do both here, and we're proving it, and numbers don't lie, because I'm a statistics kind of person anyway. So it was good.
And then the same weekend that you got to 250, Scott Bradley got to 400.
And Chris Saylor got to 400.
400 earlier in the
That's
year.
The beauty of being at Princeton, I will say, is that you just, you're, it's just not about you, right? Like, you can't even have a moment in the sun, right, in a good way. And I get home from, I had a home visit on Sunday, and I get back, and there is some flowers and a bottle of champagne and a Princeton sign that our football coach had left on my doorstep. I mean, it's just like, and he went undefeated in his senior year, right? I mean, in his this year. So it happened the right week that it's, you're following heavyweights here.
And Scott Bradley, he has the most wins of any Princeton baseball coach since Bill Clark, who was the first baseball coach who coached here in 1900.
Oh, geez.
So he's put together a remarkable run as well. You mentioned Chris Saylor, who got to 400 earlier in the year, and now you have 250. So, I mean, it's a lot of winning going on.
Keep going.
So
big weekend.
So it is a big weekend. It's Princeton at Brown Friday night. It's at Yale Saturday night. Forgot to check the start time. 7 and 5. 7 and 5. Okay.
Yeah.
So 7 and 5, if you're going to be in New England, you go check those games out. And then back at Yale next weekend. The men's games are first, right? It's 12:30 and 3 for the men.
I embarrassingly know nothing about the way the tournament works this year, because I was really up to speed on it last year, and I figure they haven't changed it much. And I know that Monday they'll start hammering us with information.
I honestly do not even remember who played first last year, the men or the women.
I think we played second. I think it goes men in the morning.
The first year it was men, women, women, men.
It
was women, men,
yeah, no,
men,
it was
women.
Women second last year. And so that's another benefit of getting the one seed, is you play the first game instead of the second, so you don't play the night game.
Well, I promise you that when we talk next week, we will know the exact start times of those games in the Ivy League
and
tournament.
And we'll know who's in it.
And
that's
we will
exciting.
Know the exact matchups. So a lot of combinations this weekend. One thing you do know, or a few things you know. One, Princeton's in. Two, Princeton will be the number one seed if they sweep, regardless of what anybody else does. And three, Princeton can be no lower than the two seed. So we will wrap up this week and look ahead to the tournament next week.
Awesome.
So thank you for being with us.
I'm glad to be here.
So for Princeton women's basketball coach Courtney Bankhart, I'm Jerry Price. Thank you for being with us on the Court Report, and thank you for your continued support of Princeton women's basketball.